Okay, I'll just share a few. A few thoughts on the Haggadah. The Halach Ba'Anya. There's a lot of questions you could ask about Halach Ba'Anya. Hopefully you'll have a chance to answer three or four of them. The most obvious question to ask in Halach Ba'Anya is more of like a, perhaps a Lundish question. It's not really in the content of Halach Ba'Anya. But like, what's it doing there? It seems totally out of place, right? All of a sudden, Magid's will start with Manishtani, ask the question, give the answers. We have all these things come up later. Why do we start with this strange proclamation of Halach Ba'Anya, like before we even started Magid? So, I think I heard two answers. I don't remember where. I think I might have heard them both in the name of the Rav, but I don't remember. That one, you could say that it's not really the beginning of Magid, it's really the end of Yachatz. Right, Yachatz, we broke the matzah in half. We want to know, why do we break the matzah in half? The Pashup Shafa. Why do you make the matzah in half? Everyone knows, you break the matzah in half because it came in lechem oni, like an oni, it's dark over prusa. Only it's half and saves half for later. So we're just explaining, why do we just do Yachatz? Halach ma'anya, because we want to be a kiyum and lechem oni. And then we're going on to the segue into Magid. Another pshat, this one I'm pretty sure I saw in the Rav, is that, no, maybe it's a halachic vart. So what does lechem oni mean? Lechem oni on the one level means poor bread. But Chazal also darshin it to be lechem sh'onim alav dvarim harbe. Right, the kiyum that you have to say the Haggadah al halechem, on the matzah. This, I think, is in the Rav Siach HaGrid. So the Haggadah has to be said on the matzah, onim alav dvar harbe. So what do we say? In order to be mekayim saying the Haggadah on the matzah, what do we first? So we first point out the matzah and say, this is the matzah which has significance that ties into the following story. And only then can we start magid, because first we have to point out the tie into the matzah. And then we can start Magid, because then when we actually start Magid with Manashtana, we'll be saying it al ha-matzah, because we already explained that this is all tying into the matzah. So that we're mekayim the din of lechem sh'onim alav davar harbi.
Dvarim harbi. Then why have we actually said lechem
lechem? So we could be saying lechem only, because lechem sh'onim alav davar harbi, that's the word out of which we get the drush of onim alav davar harbi. Although I don't know if that part the Rav said. The more interesting question, not more interesting, another question about Halach Ma'anya, which is sort of an obvious question, is that the whole thing from beginning to the end is a non sequitur. Halach ma'ani diachol of a sudden be'arad Mitzrayim, right? Regardless of you could say one shot, yachatz, you could say lech v'shonu l'zover harbe, you could say just stam, it's a great sentence, it makes a lot of sense. Halach ma'ani diachol of a sudden be'arad Mitzrayim. The next sentence, called dich v'n yesev yech, called dich v'n yesev yefsach, right? Also makes perfect sense, of course, Jews, right? Rachmanim de rachmanim, we invite poor people in who don't have to share our food with Pesach Seder. It works out beautifully. But what's the connection between these two lines? So Shkach, this is Lechem Oni, which reminds us he's a Mitzrayim, and we're nice people and we invite in poor people. What's the connection? So the Rav says, based on the famous sheet of the Gra. The Gra says, everyone knows that you look in the Shulchan Aruch, and we have a minhag. In America we call it Ma'os Chitim. I think in Israel they call it Kimcha de Pisra. Right, it's one of those strange things where in America they use Hebrew and in Israel they use Golis language. Okay, similar, and if you ever learn Hilchos Gittin, you'll see we do that by Hamachuna and Demiskri. If you have another Hebrew name, you say Demiskri, Ruvain. If you have an English name, you say Hamachuna, Jack. Okay, so it's a simon to help remember, it's a simon to help remember Mo'os Chitim and Kimcha de Pesach. But Lemaisa, so why do we have this minhag of Mo'os Chitim? So I'll be pashtus, we'd all have thought until we read the Gra. That is just, well, very practical. Look, people need money to buy expensive food for the Pesach Seder, and you want to make sure, even if they go hungry the rest of the year, you don't want them to go hungry on Pesach, so you give them money. The Gra says, no, it's actually a din. I don't know if it's a din do raisa, but it's at least a kim do raisa, din merum is in the raisa. It's a din that comes from the Torah. So the Torah says, and the Torah should have says, matzos tochlu es shivas hayamim. The Gra points out, the Torah says, matzos ye'achel es shivas hayamim. Anyone here go to YU, remember the matzos ye'achel guy?
Yes,
yeah, so how could you forget? So matzos ye'achel es shivas hayamim. So matzos ye'achel, the Torah says, the Gra says, not that you have to eat matzah, which how do you do? It's that you have to ensure that matzahs are eaten, not only by you, but by all the Jews, you have to ensure matzahs are eaten. Therefore, it's a din d'or rice that we have to give most chitim before Pesach, and literally most chitim for matzahs, not just on for food. Because matzos ye'achel, part of the mitzvah of matzah, is making sure that they're eaten by all the Jews, not just by you. So, I think I can say this, not as arguing with this pshat, but as adding to this pshat, that there's a philosophical explanation as well. This is the bread of poverty. Now, this is only one side of Machlokas, which hopefully we'll have time to get into. But, halach ma'anya, this is the bread of oni. What do we emphasize about the matzah here? We emphasize that it's a bread of only of poverty. What does it remind us? Right? We know there's a pshat, the Avodraham brings down, quoted by the late Rishon as well, that when the Jews were Mitzrayim, they were poor, the slaves, they ate matzah, slaves eat matzah, it's very poor bread. So this poor bread reminds us of our poverty and oppression in the Sheba and Mitzrayim. It reminds us that we used to be poor in Mitzrayim. That's lechem oni. So we don't just stand talking about the matzah. We specifically mention this lechem oni, which we could have said a lot of other things about matzah, that it reminds us of poverty. It reminds us that we used to be very, very badly off in Mitzrayim. So now what's the connection? The connection is pashut. You imagine a schnorrer who has nothing to eat, who's homeless, whatever, knocks on the door of a rich guy. So this one rich guy who's been brought up in the lap of luxury, always spoiled, etc., thought a lot of himself, came from a very aristocratic family. What's he going to think? He might think, look, you know, my family worked very hard for our money. You know, we're better, we're a higher class of people. What do I have to share with you? Get out of my doorway. You can imagine he knocks on another mansion, and there's a guy who actually talked to used to be homeless on the street also. And then he got lucky, turned a fortune, won the lottery, someone gave him money, whatever the case may be. He used to be homeless on the street, and now he has a big mansion and a lot of money. So what's he going to think? He's going to say, hold on, I can relate to you. I understand where you're coming from. Like, his heart's going to bleed for him. He's going to empathize with this plight. Like, I know what it's like to be homeless and poor on the street. So of course he's going to share his money with them. So what's pshat? Halach ba'anya, we, Baruch Hashem, I don't know if I speak for everyone in the room, but Nastam, you know, nowadays, we're all brought up rich. I don't mean necessarily mamish, like Bill Gates rich, but, you know, we never had to worry when we were kids about whether our parents would give us food the next day. We never had to worry when we were kicked out and live on the street. You know, we were put up with everything. So the Mamash, a poor person, has no food to eat for Pesach. We don't really understand his suffering. So what does the Torah tell us? Halach ba'anya. First, think about the fact, this is lechem oni. Remember that this is what we were like in Mitzrayim. We had poverty, all we had is bread and water, flour and water, we had nothing. Like, even though personally we don't have any personal recollections of poverty, we have a communal memory, a national memory, of how we used to be downtrodden, oppressed, and poor in Mitzrayim. If we can really feel that, if we really feel that we used to be poor, then our natural reaction has to be, so we feel we're poor. Well, we have to thank Hashem, but that's not enough. It's not only been on the Makom. If we really recognize that we were poor once, the natural reaction has to be, if we see someone else who's poor, we empathize, we understand where they're coming from, we can relate to them, we feel their pain, and then naturally more generous with other people. And that's, I think, an important yusod here, even though most of the Seder is about Ben Lamakom, most of the Seder is saying, I remember Maskel Bignos used to be so bad, and now Hashem made it so good, so we really appreciate what Hashem did for us. That's the main thrust, but that's not the only thrust. If we remember we used to be so poor, and it's only Hashem was nice to us and gave us what we have, then we should remember that we're supposed to share it with other people. After all, Hashem doesn't like us better than any other Jew, but we should share it with other Jews as well. And therefore, it's telling us this, you could call it an ethical message, but Adam la'chaveiro nafgamina, of remembering our poverty Mitzrayim. The Rav once said, actually, he suggested, I don't think he was saying both in Mochlat, but the Rav once suggested that this, the famous question, why do the Jews have to endure Sheba and Mitzrayim in the first place? Avraham, Yisrael, and Yaakov lived in Eretz Yisrael. Why couldn't they just stay there? They lived pretty well most of the time, although had their ups and downs. Why couldn't they just stay there? So the Rav once suggested that it's to teach us ethical sensitivity to the poor, downtrodden, and oppressed. If we would always have been rich princes and successful and independent, etc., we would never be able to have something in our collective memory that made us feel what it's like to be oppressed and beaten. But when we went to Mitzrayim, we saw how bad it was to be a stranger in a strange land, to be oppressed and enslaved, etc., then, when we see other people who are poor and oppressed and downtrodden, we can really empathize and understand where they're coming from and feel for them and react generally and try to help them. So the Rav once suggested the whole purpose of Sheba Mitzrayim was to give us this, I don't know if the whole purpose, but one of the purposes of Sheba Mitzrayim was to give us this ethical sensitivity that we shouldn't be spoiled and think it's always been good, that we should recognize, know what it feels like to be on the other side, and therefore be able to help poor people and be rachmanim, bnei rachmanim. He wants to say that's why Jews are such rachmanim bnei rachmanim, because of the experience of Sheba Mitzrayim. He actually went a little further. He says once, you know, like even like non-from Jews, you can still tell they're Jews and they get involved in politics because they're always like, you know, economic liberals and trying to help the poor, etc. And he says that's not just, you know, whatever, something random. That's because even if they've forgotten the Torah, they still remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. They still feel what it's like to be slaves a little bit in their souls, and that's why they're so interested in helping other people. Okay, maybe we'll come back to Halach Ma'anya a little later. I want to talk about a passage a little later in the Haggadah. Just I want to tell a very beautiful bar for Moshe Feinstein. I don't know, I even told it last year, I don't remember. Right before the Arba Bun, we have this strange line, which later on, if we have a chance, we'll give a different Hezbollah to. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu Baruch Shanas and Torah Le'am Yisrael. Right? Baruch Hashem for giving us the Torah. It's like Birkas HaTorah, right? Hashem V'Nasam Lanu Es Torah. So it's more or less just a different Nasach of Birkas HaTorah. Now, of course, objectively, that's a wonderful thing. And any time is on it, we believe in Baruch Shanas and Torah Le'am Yisrael. But what's it doing particularly here, right? It's not Shavuos, it's Pesach now. So what's it doing right here? So Rav Moshe Feinstein says that it's the preface, or it's coming before Keneged Arba Banim Divrei Torah. What's the point of Keneged Arba Banim Divrei Torah? The Torah has in it the answer to the Tam, the Yerushal, the Rasha, and the Tzaddik. The Torah has within it the answers to many different kids on many different madrigas, right? From like, I don't know, kindergartners to, you know, elementary school kids to advanced kol young light, whatever it may be. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein says that when we see how the Torah answers to the four sons, it reminds us of the magic of the Torah. Well, have them, if you imagine, let's say I'm trying to teach math. So I'm going to take a math textbook that my son brings home from second grade and give it to a college student to learn math. It's a joke. Well, he doesn't have to learn math. So no, I'll take the college math textbook and I'll give it to my son who's in second grade. That's ridiculous. It's over his head. He won't understand the first word of the first page. It says, but you have a chumash with Rashi. And in second grade, the kid learns the Chumash with Rashi, and you can walk to the Beis Medrash and see Rav Schechter sitting up front learning the Chumash with Rashi. And obviously, Rav Schechter is not learning it the same way the second grader is. The point is, the same Chumash is simple and clear and exciting and has enough narrative and relevance that a second grader can really learn a lot from it. And it's so deep that if you're Radaic and every word and every letter and all the different themes and you think about it, even a Gadol Hador can find new chidushim in the Torah. And it's the same Torah. You don't need separate textbooks for second grade or for Rosh Yeshiva. So that's where the same Torah, Keneged Arba Banim Dibra, if that Torah is Keneged Arba Banim Dibra Torah, everything can be interpreted for She'ini Yudei Elishol on his level and for Chacham on his level, then we have to say Birkas HaTorah because you recognize the uniqueness of the Torah more so than any other textbook which has ever been written, that Hashem built into it so many different layers that it's the appropriate textbook and has something to teach people no matter what matzav or what age or what situation they're in. After the Arba Banim, we have a very strange passage. Yachol Meirosh Chodesh. And again, like everything I got, I mean, you don't have any kashas like what it means. It all makes sense. The question is always what it's doing here, right? Yochum Rosh Chodesh makes perfect sense. This is exactly what belongs in Shas. You might think you can mekayim. You can't all the lundus of the Havmiyas. We're not going to now. You might think you can mekayim Sifri Sifri Shayim for Rosh Chodesh Nisan Tam Lom by Yomahu. Okay. You might think Mibod Yom Iba Yomahu Yochum Mibod Yom. Right? So Tam Lom Bavrezeh Bavrezeh Lo Amarti El Shas Yis Matan Mor Mekum Vnechi Bavrezeh. The Matan Mor is sitting there, so it has to be after Seisa Kocham. Okay, that's great, but what's it doing in the Haggadah? The Alpi Pashtus, I know some of us already discussed this, but Alpi Pashtus, you think, what's the Haggadah supposed to tell you? The story of Yitzias Mitzrayim. You should expect to open the Haggadah and see, well, this happened first in Yitzias Mitzrayim, and then this happened next, and etc., which we have in some parts of the Haggadah. All of a sudden, instead of having Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, we see the instructions for Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Right, it's almost like, I don't know, like some, you know, primordial Haggadah had the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim with little instructions on the side, and then someone accidentally copied the instructions into the middle, and now we say the instructions. So obviously, that's a joke, that's not really a theory or interpretation or anything. Don't misquote me here. But, what's pshat? Why are the instructions in the Haggadah? And it's not just Yochel Meirosh Chodesh. It's most of the Haggadah, right? If you cut out the Piyutim, right? Let's say you go back to the Haggadah of Sadigon or something, and look like what was in the text of the Rambam and the Gaonim of the Haggadah, it might even be, for all I know, real, but I haven't counted up, halachos of how to do the Haggadah instead of the actual Sipur of the Haggadah. What do we start with? Right from the very beginning, the kid asks the question, we say, Avad Mayinu Mefar Mitzrayim. One sentence of the story of Sipur is just right. And very next, we get to halachos. First halacha, who has to do the mitzvah? The answer is everyone, even Chachamim, Zakenim, and Nevonim. Next question you might ask, how much of the mitzvah do you have to do? Kolamar, or even the Shabbach, the more the better. Another halacha. Then, in case you didn't believe us, we have a story to prove those two halachas. Maitzah, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Elazar, Ben Azariah, V'chuli. Right, these are five Tanarim, I don't think anyone could deny. They're Chachamim, Nevonim, Zakenim, and Yodim, and Satorah. And yet, they did the mitzvah, which proves the halacha, and they did it. They talk to Yitzias Mitzrayim until morning, till their students got them to say Kriyat Shema, which proves Kolamar Beris and Meshubach, that the more the better. So now we've proven the halacha from a Maisa. Okay, great. Next, Can I get out of a bottom of the Torah? How do you have to do the mitzvah? So the answer is, you have to do the mitzvah in four different ways, depending on what kind of son. You have another halacha. There's no story here. It's halachas. If you have this kind of son, what's the chiyuv? If you have that kind of son, what's the chiyuv? So more halacha. So for who, how much, exactly how do you have to do it? And it's not over yet. Then we say when. Yachol be'erosh chodesh, when do you start? So you have to have all the drasha that teach us when to start. And then finally we get to mitchila of the avodah zarah. How you have a saying, and we get back to the and we get back to the story. So what's all these halachas doing in the Haggadah? Why not just tell the story of Sefer Yisrael? Why do we need all these halachas? So obviously, this is an important yesod in the Haggadah, and it's a halachic yesod. Right, they quote it from the Brisker Rav, but even without the Brisker Rav, I think it would be a pretty clear yesod. That the mitzvah of Sefer Yisrael, which we would have thought for very good reason, means tell the story of Sefer Yisrael. It's to tell narrative, to tell Haggadah, to tell stories. You can actually mekayim that mitzvah by learning Hilchas Pesach, even though there's no actual story there. Hilchas Pesach is a kiyum in Sefer Yisrael Mitzrayim. How do we know that? Well, first of all, it's amazing that half the Haggadah is Hilchas Pesach, and you think the Haggadah should be the proper kiyum mitzvah, right? Whoever wrote the Haggadah, right, was writing it in order to best be mekayim the halacha. And, but even besides that, the Arba Banim. Right? What do you tell the Arba Banim? The Rashi, you give Musar. The time you tell a little bit of story. The Sheni Odeh Elisha, you tell the story. What do you tell the Ben Chacham? Afata Amaroke Hilchas HaPesach. You don't tell the Ben Chacham stories. Now again, it could be you have to mention the story once. I'm not saying you should skip the story entirely. The Ben Chazash says, okay, you have to mention the story once. But for the Chacham, you don't tell him stories and stories and stories. You tell him Hilchas Pesach. You do Lundus and you learn Hilchas Pesach with him. Straight Mefurish. And if that's not good enough, the Tosefta himself in Perek Yud emphasizes this point twice. First, it says straight out, Chayav Adam Lasok Behelchus Pesach Kol HaLayla. You have to learn Helchus Pesach all night. It says you have to learn Helchus Pesach, straight out. And then it has a story. Our story has five Chachamim who are Mesapu Yisrael Mitzrayim, but the Tosefta has a different five Chachamim, not a different version of the same story, a totally different story. Ma'isav Ramingam, Leo Luzakanim, Shayim Subim, Veis Baitos, Benzonim, Belud, Vayosugim, Behelchus Pesach, Kol HaLayla, till the morning came. Similar story about Chacham and Tanarim who learned all night, but it says in verse, they were Osek Ehelchus Pesach Kol HaLayla. So the Tosefta clearly backs up what we tell the Ben Chacham. Hilchas HaPesach, it's not just a key and mitzvah to learn the story. It's a key and mitzvah to learn Hilchas Pesach. And then it would make a lot of sense. Why do we have all the halachos in the Haggadah instead of stories? Because the kiyum is not just the stories. The kiyum also includes learning the halachos. Okay, that's the lumbish point. Now, what's the hashgafa behind this? Right, so why should that be? Meaning it's very nice if you were to tell me that it's good to know halachas, to know lumdus. That's true in Kol Tarkul every day of the year, right? So it's good on Yontif to know the Hilchas Chag B'Chag for sure. But why is that part of the mitzvah of the Seder night of Sefer Yisrael Mitzrayim? So I think there's an unbelievable yesod here. The pasuk says, "Ba'avor zeh asah Hashem li v'tzeisim Mitzrayim." And I know the Beis Halevi takes this in one direction, we take it in a slightly opposite direction. Not we, Rashi ibn Ezra. It's a very difficult pasuk. You look at the Rishonim in that pasuk, they're all very much worried about exactly how to get the words to work out. A very pasuk shot. Ba'avor zeh, because of this, Hashem did miracles for me and took me out of Mitzrayim. So what's the zeh? So we know what zeh is. What does zeh mean? Zeh in the Haggadah. What's zeh? Matzah mar. Right? So what's shot? So Rashi says straight out there, nothing fancy, pasuk shot Rashi, we don't say Pesach, but they don't have it. We'll start with Pesach also. In order that I keep the mitzvahs, what did Rashi say? Because of the mitzvahs, Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. Ibn Ezra says the same thing. He says these are tchilas mitzvahs. This is examples of mitzvahs. Because of the mitzvahs, Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. What does that mean? Ibn Ezra says, what's shat? What's the yisod, says Ibn Ezra? Most poshut thing in the world. Hashem only took us out of Mitzrayim. Why? Not because Hashem was a civil rights crusader, and not because he believed in freedom, all of which might be true. But that's not why he took us out of Mitzrayim, right? They might all be wonderful ideas. But that's not why he took us out of Mitzrayim. He took us out of Mitzrayim, Lotzion Mitzrayim, Rak La'avdo. He took us out of Mitzrayim to be Ovid Hashem. We left Mitzrayim for one reason only, to serve Hashem. How do we know? It says straight out all over the Chumash, Shalach es Ami, right? Remember, you guys don't remember the old days Soviet Jewry, let my people go. So let my people go is true, but it's only half the story. It never says let my people go in the Torah. It says Shalach es Ami.
Yeah,
The Yavduni, let my people go, right? Yeah, we don't believe in, you know, Russian Jewry so they can be free from persecution, and so they can be free to keep the mitzvahs, to learn Torah, to be Jewish. Not freedom from slavery, but freedom to serve Hashem. And that's, I think, a Pashan answer. Everyone has this question, why does Moshe keep going to Paran saying, let my Israel go worship Hashem in the desert? Why does he keep lying to him? Why not just say, let them be free? Saying the answer is Pashan. He wasn't lying. He was talking, telling Paro the truth. He wasn't asking for them stop to be free. He was asking them to go and serve Hashem. Memela, once you serve Hashem, you can't go back to Paro. He's going to keep you from doing the mitzvahs, right? To serve Hashem, you have to be independent and you have to be your own person. But Moshe was telling Paro the absolute truth. He wasn't lying to him. He wasn't trying to trick him. He was telling Paro the amkos of the truth. I don't want you to let Klal Yisrael go stop free. That might be a Paul Yotze. It might be a side effect. I want you to let Am Yisrael serve Hashem. And that's Ibn Ezra quotes, Kakasop, Otsiachos, Am Mitzrayim, Tavrozo, Kemarzeh. Hashem told Moshe straight out, you're going to take Am Yisrael out of Mitzrayim and worship Hashem al Harzeh. What does that mean? It means receive the Torah. So the whole purpose of the Yitzias Mitzrayim is to keep the Torah. Meaning, ultimately, the purpose of Yitzias Mitzrayim is not stand for freedom, but for Torah. So therefore, what do we want to teach our children? It's a beautiful idea. Everyone knows the best way to teach something is not to give someone like a whole Musar lecture about it, but to like just build it into the fabric of what they're doing so they start to assume it as natural. So what do we tell our kids? If we would just tell them a story, we used to be slaves, all it was so tough, and now we're free. Then what are the kids going to think? They're saying, oh great, you know, Hashem is wonderful, he makes us free, now we're free, we can have a more enjoyable life. Say, no, we know there are tzvei dinim in Maslow, we know some side of Shvach. It's not only physical, but spiritual as well. Now we're over the Hashem. So what do we tell our kids? We tell them. But even better than telling them, we build it into the fabric of the Seder. We start by saying, we're not just going to tell a story. You should know, every generation kids, we're about to do a mitzvah of Sipur Yisrael Mitzrayim. That mitzvah has halachos about it. It has to be done at the right time. I know. Everyone thinks if we could just have the Seder 6 o'clock like the conservative Jews, you know, it would be easier, the kids wouldn't be so tired, b'chuli, it makes so much more sense, we'd be a better spiritual experience. It's all very nice and true. But Yahum Yadum Tamalomar, Ba'abrazah, but there are halachas about what we're about to do with the Seder. The halachas are that it has to be done at a certain time because that's what the Torah says, because of the structure for the way things work. It's not just whatever seems to make sense. We start saying, let's learn 5 pages of halachas of what we're doing, because what we're doing is not just telling you a story. What we're doing is being mekayim a mitzvah by fulfilling the halachas that Hashem commanded us. And the message our kids get is that it's not just about freedom. It's about kiyum mitzvos, it's about knowing halachos, it's about doing things the right way, and therefore we're sending them, maybe you call it a subliminal message, I don't know, but an implicit message in the theme of the Seder we have to teach our kids, not just the story, but hilchos, Sipur Yisrael Mitzrayim, to show them it's not about freedom, it's about freedom to do mitzvos, it's about structuring our freedom through the Torah and mitzvos and Avodas Hashem. And that, I think you could actually say this as a little vart in the famous Brisker Rav. I said, I don't have to repeat the famous Brisker Rav on Arba Kosos. He says, it's a dinim for the Rambam and Arba Kosos. It's chayrus, just you're very happy to celebrate freedom, so you drink a lot. And it's brachos ala kos. There's 4 mitzvahs which you have to do as a chalos mitzvah ala kos. Use those 4 kos shel bracha. So, what's the sort of drush behind the Brisker Rav? No, there's chayrus. We're just celebrating. We're so happy that we're free. Then there's a matter of doing mitzvahs, and we have a form of haloshem mitzvahs, ala kos, right? We use everything in this world to be a mitzvah, we use a kos to do a mitzvah to Hashem. So the Brisker Rav point is, we do those with the same 4 cups. The same cups that we're drinking and getting drunk and having a good time enjoying our freedom are the same cups where we say, how do we use that enjoyment of freedom? Not just stam, to be kos or shel bracha, to do mitzvahs on, because the what we really enjoy about our freedom is the freedom to do mitzvahs, not just to drink a lot. And I think that's really a yesod of what we're trying to pass on every generation in the Pesach Seder. I just want to add, I'll add maybe a chiddush to this. This brings up, of course, an important philosophical question, which Chazal already dealt with. What is Pesach ultimately all about? Right? If I just got through saying that the message of the Haggadah, the implicit message we're trying to send our kids in the Haggadah, is that it's not just about stam freedom, have a good time, now we don't have to work hard, now we have money, etc. It's about freedom to do mitzvot. So ultimately, what's the ideal? To be Ovdei Hashem, to be Avdei Hashem, right? The highest ideal is Moshe, Vayom Hashem Moshe, Eved Hashem. So the highest ideal is to be an Eved. But isn't Pesach celebrating Chirus? Right? And if that's just I don't know, it's not just like some, I don't know, article in the foreword that says Pesach is celebrating freedom. And we say it four times a day on Pesach, right? Fatit and Shem Lokenu. So he's saying the tefillah that we're celebrating Chiras, our freedom on Pesach. Yet we're not. What are we celebrating freedom? No, we're celebrating Avdus to Hashem. So what's Pesach all about? Are we celebrating freedom? Or are we not? Freedom is terrible. We're celebrating the fact that we used to be Avadim Laparo. Now we're Avadim to Hashem. I mean, the truth is, they both sound like great ideas to me. But which one is it? So, of course, Chazal already dealt with this question. In Avos, right? The Brice in the sixth paragraph of Avos. Darshan's very famously, right? I'll take Chorus al-Luchos, I'll take Chorus al-Chirus, Ein Lucha ben Chor, and we shall also be Talmud Torah. Ultimately, the ultimate Chirus is through, the ultimate Chirus is through Torah. Now, what is that? Okay, so they've addressed the question. They haven't explained what they meant, right? What do they mean by this? So ultimately, being an Eben Hashem is the greatest chiyus. Okay, how does that work? What does it mean ultimately? So I think there's a classic accepted way of understanding this, and then I have a chiddush, a slightly different way of understanding the Mishnah in Brisa and Avos. So I think the classic way to understand this Brisa and Avos, right, this is what they tell everyone, Shana Aleph, and it's in all the Kiruv books, and it's found in the Tiferes Yisrael, right, Al-Attar, and many, many other Gedolim, is that it's not like without the Torah we'd be free. Right? Like without the Torah we'd be free, and the Torah makes us do things, right? Like, sometimes you start talking to high school kids, and they're like, oh, why do we have to do everything, and we're slaves, and we're not free, why can't we just have a good time? So they think without the Torah they'll be free. First of all, says, no way. What do you mean without the Torah you'll be free? What do you think, like, you know, that secular people in America, like, they're free because they don't have a Torah to follow? You can choose whoever they are. They're free because they don't have a Torah to follow? No way. What does freedom mean? Freedom means I can really do what's best for me and what I think is the best thing to do for me. Are people free? You have a multi-billion-dollar industry on Madison Avenue of people who are sending all kinds of messages through the media and through television, which they watch for 5 hours a day, and the radio and the internet and everything. What are all those people being paid billions of dollars to do on Madison Avenue? To get you to give someone else your money by buying something. Now, buying something you really wanted? You need to spend billions of dollars on Madison Avenue, right? If I really make a product people want, everyone loves delicious bread. I bake bread, I sell it at a good price. They don't need to advertise, right? Your local bakery doesn't advertise. Advertising means people don't really want it. It's not really worth the money, but I want people to do it anyway so that I can enrich myself. So I spend a lot of money to influence them through advertising to do something silly that they don't want to do. So that's chayrus. So that means if you don't have the Torah, then you have a bunch of advertising executives on Madison Avenue forcing you to do things you don't want to do instead so that they can make a buck off you. Right, that's not chayrus. Right, or you have kids, or you just have peer pressure that forces them to do certain things. Or, it's very strong points out, you get to horror, right? I don't know, you have someone who's on a strict diet. Right, a strict diet, they want to lose weight, they have low self-esteem, they want to help themselves, they really want to repair their psychological well-being, and their friend, like, helps them, keeps them from eating the cake. So their friend one day goes away on a trip, they say, now they're free, and they eat 6 cakes for breakfast. So, is that freedom? No, that's slavery. The Yetzer Hara, their addiction overcame them, and they did something which they totally didn't want to do and make them feel miserable later. That's not freedom. It was freedom while someone was keeping them on the straight and narrow. It was slavery while they're just given over to the Yetzer Hara. I mean, people have gambling addictions, people have all kinds of addictions, people have drug addictions, right? So free, legalize everything. That's not freedom. They're just letting people be entrapped and enslaved by their basest Yetzer Haras, by all the worst forces. Because there's no such thing as someone who has just like a person alone in the universe with no forces acting on them. Everyone has forces acting on them. And okay, the obvious case, the gambling addicts and the drug addicts, etc. But even someone, a normal person like you and me, right? If you think about it philosophically, there might be something we know is the best way to live our lives and the best thing to do. But our Yetzer Hara, not an addiction, not something that anyone psychologists worry about, but our Yetzer Hara gets the better of us and makes us do something that we later regret that we didn't really want to do. And we're enslaved by Yetzer Hara to do something that we didn't really want to do. So there's no such thing as someone who's just does whatever they want. The question is, you have two choices. Either you're going to let the Yetzer Hara and the Madison Avenue and the peer pressure and the other people pressure you into doing things you don't want to do, or you're going to let the Torah tell you what to do. The only difference is, everyone else wants to do something that's not in your best interest. Hashem gave us the Torah, not because, Chas v'Shalom, he needs our help doing anything. Hashem is perfect in and of himself. The only logical reason he gave us the Torah is to help us do what's best for us. So by the Torah keeping us from being enslaved by those other forces and keeping us on the straight and narrow and telling us to only allow to do what's actually best for us, then that's the only true freedom. I think that's a standard interpretation. Ein lecha ben chorin el misha osim tamu Torah. You can only have true chiyus through Torah because otherwise your Yetzer Hara and other people act on you to make you do things that you don't really want to do, if you would sit and think about it. But the Torah only lets you do things that you really want to do, which is the truest freedom. That's, I think, the standard pshat. I just think there's room to be chadash a different pshat, because I think there's more words in the Brisa that need to be explained. What words in the Brisa need to be explained? What words haven't been explained yet? No, explained. You're only free if you're free from all these forces that make you do things you don't really want to do, because the Torah is madrig for you in the good way. What word hasn't been explained? Ein lecha ben chorin, elami she'osek b'talmud Torah. What a Talmud Torah learning. Could have said, ein lecha ben chorin, elami she'osek b'mitzvos, elami she'shomer ha-Torah. Right? Only someone from is a ben chorin, which is a beautiful idea. I'm not chas shalom arguing on the idea. I think it's an unbelievable idea. But there's a little more diuk lashon in the Brisa. Ein lecha ben chorin, elami she'osek b'talmud Torah. You only can be a ben chorin if you learn Torah. It's not enough to do Torah. Only if you're holding and learning, you're a ben chorin. Why is it that only if you're holding and learning, you're a ben chorin? So I thought you would chadish the following idea. That, ultimately, what's the difference between avdus and chiras? Right? Let's say freedom. Everyone has to go to work, pretty much, right? And there's no one, like, eats money. Right? So, for pretty much most people, you have to go to work. Yes, someone, is your work slavery or freedom? The answer is, it all sort of depends. Some people feel like their work is slavery, they're slaves every day. Some people enjoy their work and feel that their work is... I don't know if it frees them, you know, totally, but it's a free occupation. They enjoy their work, right? Some people's work is slavery and some people's work isn't. So what's the difference? Why are some people's work slavery and some people's work freedom? Everyone has to go to work. You need bread, you need to pay the rent. So the answer is it all depends what kind of work you do, right? If you're, I don't know, some laborer in China who's in a Fisher-Price toy factory who has to, like, I don't know, screw in the back of some stupid little toy like 6 trillion times, you know, on the assembly line, then you've got to figure that work's going to be avdus. And if you're a researcher who's trying to discover the new grand unified theory, the new cure for cancer, or whatever, and you're running an organization or something, then you're going to feel much better about your work. Like, you'll stay a little later because you really want to get it done, etc. What's the difference? The difference is that one work is like dumb work that has no meaning to you, that you don't really care about at all, and you just have to do, and that's slavery. There's another kind of work, the researcher, the manager, etc. He's doing work that requires his intelligence and input, that he understands what's going on, he's using his brain, he like believes in the cause, he understands why things have to work. Maybe he doesn't understand every single principle of the organization, but within his ambit, he's planning things out and doing them in a logical way, and he's putting his personal imprint into it, and he feels that he's really accomplished something relevant and meaningful to him. What's the difference? The difference is sort of how much of you is in this work. And that's partially like you talk to like high school kids sometimes, it's Shabbos. And they're like, oh, I hate Shabbos. You know, even kids who keep Shabbos, okay, they're not brave enough to not keep Shabbos. Right? But I hate Shabbos. You can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do anything, it's no fun, right? How come the rabbis don't let us have any fun? I hate Shabbos. And it's saying like, I don't know, hating Shabbos is such a beautiful idea, Shabbos and all the hashkafa behind Shabbos is so beautiful, and the lundus of Shabbos and everything we do, and you know, Shabbos is great all week long. It's not do whatever. It's not Shabbos, like everything I do has lundus and halachas and melech b'Shabbos, and you know, and I have a whole shiur about it. It's Shabbos is so much more fun to keep Shabbos. Not that we do it for the fun, but then every day of the week. And what's the point? The point is it all depends if you appreciate it. If you maybe you'll keep kultur cool because your parents said you're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do that, etc. Okay, but it's hard to find the chayrus in that. That's why kids rebel against it. If you're osek b'talmud Torah, if you're holding and learning, then everything becomes meaningful. You understand. Now, I'm not saying you understand the tamei mitzvos, that now you know the tamei mitzvos of everything in the Torah. That would be a little bold. Even Shlomo didn't go there. I'm not saying you understand the tamei mitzvos, but you understand some of the messages, the themes, the hashkafa, the vorts, the lomdos, and even everything you do is logical. Right, you understand how it comes, there's certain drushes, certain halachah, we show them, this is how we paskin, right, you can think it through, you understand where we're coming from, everything starts to make sense, right, if you learn a certain, it becomes meaningful, relevant to you, it becomes exciting, you can relate to it better, right, you learn a little drush, and you start to appreciate it. If you learn Torah, one of the points of learning Torah is, it connects you to the mitzvahs in a personal, intellectual way, because now you can appreciate them on a deeper level. I don't mean now you're being a philosopher. I mean, understanding some of the messages, understanding where the halacha comes from, ain't a dome as someone who just, you have to do this because I told you so, versus you have to do this because you know a little about the sugya and the halacha, and you learn through it on whatever level. Could be reading a Mishnah Berurah, it could be, you know, doing, you know, opening 100 svarim, on whatever level you are. But if you feel like you're in the process and you make it relevant by learning, then it's not hard to keep the Torah anymore. I mean, obviously, sometimes you have nisyonos, but there are klal, then it becomes clear. And maybe that's the amkus, the price and ovos. Ein lachem and chorin l'misha osi betalma Torah. You're a tzaddik if you keep the Torah. But it might still feel a little like avdus. But if you also have a Talmud Torah, if you're holding and learning and you appreciate everything and it's meaningful to you, then not only you're tzaddik, you're also ben chorin. Because yes, you're doing what you have to do. But you appreciate why you have to do it and you can relate to it and it's meaningful and interesting for you. So then memela, even though you have to do it, you don't have to do it like the person in China screwing the backs onto the Fisher Price toys. You have to do it like the researcher in the lab who has to do his work and find the cure for cancer, but it's interesting work to him. And therefore, it's chayrus and not avdus. So maybe that's sort of another level of why we have so many halachas in the Pesach Seder, because it's not only to remind us of our avdus to Hashem, but it's to emphasize the theme of chayrus. Yes, what we're doing here has a Seder, Kaddish Orchatz, we're doing everything in order. But we're going to learn a little halachas and appreciate why that is, what it ties into, you know, make it relevant to us. And therefore, the key to being both a Ben Choron and an Eved might be that as opposed to the Avadim of Power, we're just following orders. We're also following orders, but Hashem specially commanded us not just to follow orders, but to learn to be making those orders, in which case they become relevant to us, and we don't have to feel the Avdus, we can feel the Cheiros. And maybe that's part of the Baruch Shenas and Torah, the Am Yisrael. Thank you, Hashem, for giving us this Torah. So if you've given us just Stam commandments without Talmud Torah, then it wouldn't be as much Cheiros. It would be a lot harder to do. But with the Talmud Torah, in the Kabbalah, we should also be Talmud Torah, and I think that's why Agav is so important in education. You know, to like get into learning with people and make them appreciate things, not just because it, you know, helps advance their Talmud Torah. Because if you want to bring up a kid to be committed to be committed to halacha, then there's only so far you're going to get with avdus, just he has to follow orders. But if he's holding the sugya, he learns to appreciate it, he learns to learn on his own to be anik in it, then it'll be much more meaningful to him, and he'll be more likely to keep it. Okay, that's a little chiddush in Pirkei Avos. A little later in the Haggadah, we have a famous kasha that the Rishonim ask about, which we probably know a lot about. Maybe we'll just summarize and put things together, about Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel says, Ma'atzuz yushanu ochen al shom ma'al shom shalom hispik b'tzeik shalom v'seinu l'hachbetz ashe nigla le'am melech ha'chem lochken ha'shbrochu b'olam sh'nema v'ayofuus ha'batz sh'yosim m'sayim g'olch ha'tzot shalom ha'metzik v'shum mitzrayim v'lo yuchu l'sumeya v'gam tzeidolo esu lehem. What does the Ma'atzah commemorate? Everyone knows that we were chased out of time so quickly we didn't even have 18 minutes for our dough to rise, and we had to eat it as matzah. Rav Mersky in the Hegemon Halach is also going to slap it. Before we get to that, he has a very nice essay, which we'll repeat some of. Before we get to that, just push up shot in this. Why is it so important to remember how quickly we redeemed from Mitzrayim? My nafkam pina, if it took 3 days or it took 10 minutes, ultimately. So I think, just on a push up shot level, the point is that, you know, look, a lot of people used to be slaves. You know, 150 years ago in America, the blacks were slaves in the South. And now they're free. Why? You don't need any philosophy or theology to explain that. That's the way history works. You know, groups' fortunes go up, they go down, nations progress, you know. So they used to be slaves, and then certain historical processes happened, and now they're free. So lest someday someone will think, yeah, so the Jews are like the blacks. They used to be free in Mitzrayim, but you know, there's history, and I don't know, there's probably some kofar out there someplace who says, you know, I'm not personally familiar, but no doubt it says, yeah, the Jews used to be slaves, and then, you know, they got more progressive, they decided to free them, or they decided to get new slaves, and these people moved on, they moved up the social ladder, whatever the case may be, is that's the way history works. People become free. So just that no one should even have the habit, you know, starting along this path, Hashem commands us, eat matzah, remember? This happened, not a historical process over years and decades, like the abolitionist movement in the 1800s. In less than 18 minutes, it happened lightning quick. What did that prove? Lightning quick proves there's not even a Havminu explaining this as a historical phenomenon. Rather, it's purely a Gilushkin of Hashem, and that's why we davki Loshen Achen Nigla Liam Malchi Melech Machem Loch Kadosh Baruch Hu Golem. It's the Gilu of Melech Machem Loch Kadosh Baruch Hu. That it's not just that it's like Megillas Esther Hashem worked through the Teva. No, it's that it's a Gilu Shkina because it happened so miraculously quickly that it couldn't possibly be mistaken for a natural historical phenomenon. And that's why we davki have to eat the matzah to remember not just that Hashem arranged history so that it redeemed us, but that it was, you can't even be told to think it's regular secular history. That it happened in such a miraculous fashion that it was a nes nigla that had to be from Hashem. Okay, that's Pashup Shat. The question which The Rishonim asked, the first person I think who deals with this is the Avud Raham Alatar, who asks, Yesh Lishol, Ki Tziva Echilas Matzos, Lohoy Mitam Shlo Hechlas Vesekam, Ki Kodom Lachin Tziva Lechol Matzos. Right? But Stav, Lomar Tam Ludover, says, how can you say the Matzos are to commemorate how quickly we left Mitzrayim? When did we leave Mitzrayim? On the morning of Teslav Nisan. When did we first eat Matzos? The night before. Right? On Leil Teslav Nisan, with Tzli Yishu Matzos, Amor Mim Yochluhu. Right, we ate the carbon paste of the matzah. So we ate the matzah before this even happened. So how could you say that the reason for matzah is al shum shul hispik, can't be true at all? Moshe commanded Bnei Yisrael to eat matzah before that even happened. So what's the real reason for matzah? Right, it can't be. Obviously, Rabbi Gamliel was right, but al pi pashtos, it doesn't seem to make any sense. They ate matzah before this even happened. So how can that be the reason for matzah? So there's a few famous answers, but the Avod Raham earlier on Holach Ma'anya quotes Rav Yosef HaIzovi. I don't know who Rav Yosef HaIzovi was. And the other lady we shall pick it up from the Avod Raham, the famous pshat. Pirush Rav Yosef HaIzovi b'shem ben Ezra shahaya shavui behodu v'yimachil also lechem matzah v'lo nasnu lo lech le'olam chametz. He quotes from ben Ezra, who was captured in India, and the captives and the slaves there, they wouldn't feed any chametz, only matzah. He makes a chiddush. Matzah, here's the kasha. What does it mean, halach ba'an idiyah chalov asana bi'arad de Mitzrayim? Our answer is they ate bread in Mitzrayim. No, they didn't. They ate bread matzah after they left Mitzrayim. So the Machzor Vitri says it means, after they left, when they were freed, that morning, they left so quickly, but before they got into the next country, they were eating matzahs on the road. Okay, the Rashbam says it means, when they ate the carbon paste of Mitzrayim, they ate matzah. But the Pashup Shat means they like to stop eating the Mitzrayim while they were Avodim. So Rav Yosef HaIzovi says, yes. The Avod Raham says, they ate matzah while they were slaves in Mitzrayim. And matzah goes back hundreds of years before you see us Mitzrayim. For 210 years of Sheba, or many years are actual Sheba, you work it out. They ate matzah. Why? Because even in India, I almost said they feed slaves matzah. What's Pashat? It's obviously the best slave food. Why? It's the cheapest food, only flour and water. And it doesn't, you don't have to wait for it to rise. It's quick, right? The master doesn't cook for a slave. Slaves make their own food. You don't want them to waste their time making fancy food. You want them to make chick-chock. We've been matzah baking, we've seen how chick-chock the matzah is. That way the slaves can get back to work right away. So of course that's slave food, not to mention the fact, I know some people don't like this part about Pesach. What happens after you eat the matzah? Right? So it sticks in your stomach for a while. It's, you know, gives you, again, some people don't think that's a... That's a shevach of matzah. But it's great for slaves, right? Slaves are complaining, we're hungry, we want more food. Yeah, if it sticks in their stomach a little, you want us to spend money and give them so much food. Because they'll feel full for longer, they won't complain for more food. So it's a great matzah, it's a great food for avadim. So therefore, matzah, forget about the geula. Matzah's halach ma'an yachol avasam darin in Mitzrayim. Matzah reminds us of our abdus, we're so poor that we had matzah. We're so oppressed that we ate matzah. Net the Rabban says Mefurish in Parshas Re'eh and Tavarim Yud Tesayin. Sorry, Perek Tesayin Pasuk Beis. He explains Lahagi Kitziva Lisker Shiyatzu Bechipazon. The matzah is a commemoration of our leaving Bechipazon of the Geula. The Ani Zecher Kihayim Tzayim Lechem Tzarmayim Lachas. It's also poor to remember that we had very little food to eat and very poor food in Mitzrayim, the Sheba. V'nei Tirmozul Shnei Tavarim. Matzah has two themes. There are two commemorations in matzah. There are two remazim in matzah. Number one, it reminds us of the Sheba, Lechem Omni, and it also reminds us of the Geula, Al Shom Shul Hispik, but Seich Shul Hashem Lahakwa. So there's really two reasons behind the mitzvah of matzah. That would explain very beautifully that, besides answering the question of how did they eat matzah before the reason happened, the answer is no. One reason it happened for hundreds of years, when they ate matzah on the night of the Karban Pesach, on Leil Tesvav Mitzrayim, they would ask Moshe, why are we eating matzah, Rabbi? And he would say, oh, it's to remember the poverty of the Sheba in Mitzrayim, just like the Moro. Then the next morning they realized there was taka, a second reason to eat matzah. From the next morning it became clear there were two reasons to eat matzah. It was Zechel Sheba. It was also Zechel Geula. That would explain beautifully why we have two different passages about matzah. First there's Halach Ma'anid Yechol HaVasana B'Yard Mitzrayim. Then it says, Rav Yomil Omer, Matzah Shana Ochlan HaShomal, Shom Shul Hesbek, but Seich Shal Vasing LaHachmetz. Why? You need two passages, because there are two reasons, two themes in matzah. Halach Ba'ani tells us it's a lechem that's a zecher l'shibud. Rabbi Gamliel tells us the lechem that's a zecher l'geula. Why do we have one all the way at the beginning, one all the way at the end? So it could be the zakiyam in Maskel b'gnosim asayim b'shvach. We start with the same matzah as gnosim shvach. So we start with the shivud. Before we even start, this matzah represents the shivud. By the time we get to the end of the Haggadah, now already we've transitioned into geula. The matzah represents the geula. So it's very beautiful. It could very well be that this is not just a drush Haggadah vart, that there are two themes in matzah. It could be this is actually a halachic vart, a lamdus. Because Rav Chaim answers the question of the Shagas Aryeh on the Rush. The Rush wonders whether you have to eat a k'zayis of maror or not. Anyone know what he says? The Rush paskins you have to eat a k'zayis of maror because you say asher kisham tos is going to alech l'is maror, so therefore to be ochel we have to eat a k'zayis. The Shagas Aryeh has a few tamas on the Rush. They're all the same. Like, what's your havamina? I mean, you need to be died from the lashon of the bracha, which our bottom were metaking, you know, at some point. You die from the bracha. Obviously, you have to eat a kazayas of maror. It's a mitzvah. You have to eat everything the kazayas. Not only that, the Gemara tells us in the third parak that maror is hukash lamatza, right? Remember? Hukash lamatza, it has to be lakarka, etc. Maror is hukash lamatza. So if matzah, everyone knows you have to eat a kazayas of matzah, that's pashut. So if maror is a hekash lamatza, if matzah has to be a kazayas, then maror has to be a kazayas. So what's the Rosh's half amina? What's the Rosh's smokum suffix? It's the most obvious thing in the world. Why do you think he would die from the bracha? It should be the most poshut thing in the world, halachically. Shagas Aryeh leaves the Rosh b'tzarahim. Rav Chaim, in the Grach HaLashas in Pesachim, Rav Chaim wants to answer the Shagas Aryeh's question by saying, that would make sense if there's one din in matzah. But Rav Chaim says, there's tzvei dinim in matzah. It's actually two different mitzvahs of matzah. Why are there two different mitzvahs of matzah, right? Again, I'm always reluctant. Like, you're always like, you know, people like say, oh, it's tzvei dinim and everything. Me'echi teisa, you know, show me in the Chumash where there's tzvei dinim and matzah. So the answer is, Rav Chaim did show us in the Chumash. It's straight out there. There's two dinim and matzah. One, then it says, ba'erev tochlu matzah. So you have to eat matzah. Then another, then it says, you have to eat the Karmi Pesach. How? Al matzah sumerorim yochluhu. There's tzvei dinim and matzah. There's one din, an independent mitzvah achilas matzah. And there's another din, a tenai din achilas carbon pesach, that it's being eaten al matzah sumrorim. That's why the first din applies even bizman hazeh, midoraisa, prayer of tofu matzah. The second din is only doraisa, bizman hamikdash. So there's two totally different dinim of matzah. There's a din of independent mitzvah achilas matzah. And then there's a din of the derech achilas carbon pesach, that is to be al matzah sumrorim. Now he says, pashut. If maror is, there's a hekesh in maror and matzah. What's the hekesh in maror and matzah? Al matzah maror yachlu. Which matzah is the hekesh? Maror does not have a hekesh to the independent fee of achilas matzah. Maror, which is a way to eat the karm pesach, is hukash to matzah, which is a way to eat the karm pesach. So Rav Chaim said, now it's the most partial thing in the world. Do you need a kazayis of matzah? The answer is yes and no. For the independent din of achilas matzah, for erev tochlu matzah, savada, healing, need a kazayis, that's partial. But for al matzah sumerorim yochluhu, we don't know if you need a kzayis. You have to eat a kzayis of the Karban Pesach on matzah and maror. How much matzah and maror do you have to eat? Unclear. Because you're eating kzayis of the Karban Pesach on matzah and maror. But we have no way of knowing if it's just a detail of how to eat the Karban Pesach, whether you need a kzayis or not. So the Rav Chaim answered, just like the Rosh is mesupik whether you need a kzayis of maror, who had din is mesupik whether you need a kzayis of matzah? But not in the first din, in the second din. In the independent din of achilas matzah, for sure you need a kzayis. In the din bet, in the second din of matzah as a way to eat the Karban Pesach, the Rosh from the Sufik whether you eat a kazayis of matzah, and who had the Sufik whether you need to eat a kazayis of maror, and even though there's a hekesh that didn't help, he was the Sufik about both of them. And that's why you can't say it's achila, pashut, eat a kazayis of maror. No, it's not mitzvah achilas maror. It's mitzvah achilas Karban Pesach, al matzah umaror. So there are two totally different dinim. One din of independent mitzvah achilas matzah, one din of al matzah umaror yochluhu, and Rav Chaim says two nafkaminas. The first thing, independent achilas matzah, applies min haTorah b'zman hazeh. The second thing, al matzah sumerorim yochluhu, is only midoraisa b'zman hamikdash. The second afkamina is the independent din, but erev tochlu matzah needs a kzayis. The din of al matzah sumerorim yochluhu, how you eat something else on something, the Rosh was a suffix whether or not it needed a kzayis. And in the end, he decided, I don't know if he decided min haTorah, midrabanan, but somehow he passed it. So that what the rugged Trevor does in Hilchas, we know that Tzafnas Paneach, one of the things he loved to do was to combine philosophy and sometimes even philosophy not Hashkafa, philosophy Hashkafa and Lamdas. The Tzafnas Paneach says, Rav Chaim, Tzvei Dinim and Halacha are the Ramban and the Avud Rahams, two reasons in Drush. It says, what are the differences between the two mitzvahs? The independent mitzvah of Be'er of Tochlu Matzos. The independent mitzvah of Be'er of Tochlu Matzos. That zeichel l'geula. The independent mitzvah, matzah zushan ochel shoma. The independent mitzvah of ba'er tochlu matzos is zechu l'geula. The mitzvah of a derech achilas carbon pesach that has to be al matzos from rorin, that matzah is serving the same function of moro. You eat the carbon pesach with a zechur of shibud. So the matzah of matzah rom yochluhu is zechur of shibud. The matzah of ba'er tochlu matzos, says the Tzachmas Paneach, is zechur l'geula. So these two themes in matzahs are really Svei dinim halachli lomdish in achilas matzah. I thought based on Tzachmas Paneach, although it's made, you may call this a stretch, that you can maybe say a, you can maybe say a vart that we dealt before. Why it says halach ma'anyan transitions into kol defin yisiv yisiv. There's another line there. Hashta hachlo shana bavi ar yisrael. Hashta adu shana bavi nechor. We say shana bavi yishalayim. We're going to have the geula next year. Mir tzashem. What's the connection to Halach Ma'anyan saying L'shana Bavi Eretz Yisrael? Maybe you could say like this. If there are two themes, the theme of Zechel U'la, we can be a kind of Midorais of Hizman Azeb, but Erev Tov L'Matzos. But Halach Ma'anyan, the theme of only of Shivud, we can't really do Midorais of Hizman Azeb because we don't have Korban Pesach. So that's what we say. Say, well, one of the themes of Matz that we're introducing first is the theme of Shivud, but we're only really Mekayim that if we use it to eat the Korban Pesach. And we don't have a carbon Pesach this year, but next year we'll have a carbon Pesach, and we'll be able to mekayim this properly as well. So maybe that could explain the transition to well, the Shana Bavi Eretz Yisrael. After, unclear. The anyway, that's one approach. One famous approach to how to answer, remember the question we started with, how did they eat matzah before it even made sense, the reason even happened? So the answer is, because there are two reasons. One reason was applied for hundreds of years, Zechel Shibud. Then the next morning, they were mechadish the second reason of zecher l'geula. Another answer to this is the Abravanel quotes from someplace else. That was the Abravanel and Halach Ma'anya. The Abravanel and Rabbi Gamliel. That was the Avodah Raham and Halach Ma'anya. The Avodah Raham and Rabbi Gamliel quotes a different Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef Kimchi, wasn't that the Radak's father? Right? Rav Yosef Kimchi, who gave a different answer. He says, when they ate matzah, before it even happened, it was Hashem ha'asid, because Hashem knew the future. Really, the matzah was always to commemorate the geula and how quickly the geula happened. And even though they ate it beforehand, Hashem knew the future, so Hashem made it commemorate something that wouldn't happen yet. Okay. I just have one partial question, which is, so if Hashem had kavanah, it was Hashem ha'asid, what were Bnei Yisrael thinking? Right, Hashem said, eat this matzah. And Hashem knew, because he knew the future, Hashem ha'asid, it was because they would be redeemed so quickly that their bread wouldn't have time to rise. But how did Moshe spin this to Bnei Yisrael at the time? What were they thinking? So I think you have to answer that question, L'chora. You can answer the question beautifully, at the very least, based on the famous Beis Halevi. Beis Halevi in Parshas Bo, I'm sure we're all familiar with it. Says, what was the point of Achilas Matzah? And here I'm attacking from sort of a different angle, right? You should read him. He has a whole beautiful essay. I'm just going to take the parts that are relevant to this, which is the Yisod. He says, no, the Beis Halevi would say, that's goof for the point. The point was, it was a test of faith. The Zohar, I don't know if he quotes this, the Zohar calls matzah lachma dera emnusa, lechem emuna. Why is the matzah the lechem emuna? Because that was the whole point. Moshe came and told Bnei Yisrael, eat matzah. He said, why do we eat matzah? He says, I can't tell you, it's a secret. But Hashem said you should. So Bnei Yisrael had a choice. Like, we're going to say, no, we don't care what Hashem says, it doesn't make sense to us, we're not going to do it. But they say, no, we have emuna. The Hashem tells us to eat matzah, there's a reason to eat matzah. And Claudius, what did they do? They had lechem dera emnusa. They had emuna and ate matzah, even though they didn't understand the reason. And then, the very next morning, they understood the reason. What was the reason? Basically, he says, it wasn't just that the matzah commemorates the geula. It's that they needed a zechus to be nigal, right? They were in Menta Shari Toma. What was the zechus? And we know Hashem works, mida k'neged mida. So through what zechus should they be nigal so quickly? The answer is, through the zechus of eating matzah, which is baked very quickly, they were nigal before their dough had time to rise and became matzah. So therefore, they understood l'mafreya, that it was really made a lot of sense, it was very important for them to do this, but at the time they ate it, they were eating it with their muna without understanding what it is. And that's how the Beis Halevi reads in the Haggadah. We know everyone generally tends to read things as relevant to their contemporary situation, which is, I don't think it's a weakness of Torah, I think it's the beauty of Torah, that Torah has something in it for everyone to read to find the answers and wisdom they need to solve the challenges which they face. Beis Halevi, living in the time of Reform, said, who is the Ben Rasha? Says, the Ben Rasha is a Reform rabbi. The Ben Rasha is not a rebellious punk kid with an earring and spiked hair. You know, the Ben Rashas, they got a suit and a tie and maybe even a beard, and he's a Chashan Reform rabbi. What is a Mahavod is Oslachem? He says, of course I respect the wisdom of our tradition. But, you know, wisdom of our tradition means, depending on how we understand it, in the ancient days they made sacrifices and they had all these herbs and whatever, and that made a lot of sense to them. But nowadays, like, we only do things that make sense. We have to update it a little. What does that mean for you? If it doesn't mean something for you, then why are you doing it? Don't just do it, stop. Only do it if it means something for you, if you understand it, if you think it makes sense. And if you don't think it makes sense, then update it a little. Seems to make a lot of sense. And that's the time of the Ben Rushe. He's an accomplished philosopher, not a punk, according to the Beis Halevi. So what's the answer we tell the Ben Rushe? Now, the answer is beautiful. Because I ate matzah, and here I'm taking chronologically the other direction from the Rashi and Ibn Ezra, because I ate matzah, Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. Right? Because I ate matzah and passed the test of faith, Mida Keneged Mida, Hashem rewarded that faith by taking us out of Mitzrayim. That's what the Beis Halevi says. What do we tell the Ben Rushe? Ilo Hayasham Lo Halyanigo. Shutuk mashmo. It's not even an onesh. Memeila ilu hayosham lo nigel. Could what would the Ben Rushe have done? Moshe Rabbeinu came and says, Hashem said, eat matzah. Ben Rushe asks, why do I eat matzah? What's the meaning of this? How does it make sense to me? Moshe Rabbeinu say, I don't know. Tak, it's a good kash, it's a chuk. So the Rushe say, okay, so I'm not eating this matzah if it doesn't make sense to me. So memeila lishitasa, he wouldn't have eaten the matzah. And if he didn't eat the matzah, he wouldn't have had the zechus to deserve mida k'neged mida, a quick ge'ula. And he would have been stuck in Mitzrayim when everyone else left. Memeil lo yanigel, because he would have failed the test of faith, which is what the matzah was, lachem lenusa, a test of faith. And then everyone else would have said, now the mafreya, we're really glad we did it, because it gave us the zechus to go out of Mitzrayim. And he would have been stuck in Mitzrayim. So that's the Beis Halevi. Again, I didn't show him a lot, some more details and applications of this. That's the Beis Halevi's yisod. I think you can be mechadish. Possibly, I'll be, every once in a while, you have to be very careful about this. You chadish new pshatim every day based on some new archaeological discovery. You have to be a little careful about it, but you shouldn't be too careful about it. You know, emes is emes. So I think I'll be, our modern archaeological historical knowledge, we can maybe chadish a third answer to the question. Remember the question was, what did eating matzah mean to the Jews on the night of Korban Pesach? If it didn't make any sense yet, because the gula hadn't happened yet. First answer was, it has a second meaning, shibud. Second answer was, taka didn't make any sense. That was the point. It was a test of faith. So it was exactly the Beis Halevi's point. Maybe you could say a third answer, a third answer, which is that, really, matzah has an additional meaning. Matzah has another theme, an additional meaning, which was meaningful to them on that night, even before the gula. But what's that additional meaning? Not parallel to mor, zechel shibud. Rather, matzah has an additional level of meaning parallel to Korban Pesach. What does Korban Pesach mean al pi Chazal? That, that the Egyptians, Haynes Bach Tovas, Chayne Haynes Kulunu, the Egyptians worship the sheep. When we shecht the sheep, we were shechting their God in their face. What are they, nowadays they call it? We were dissing them, right? Right? We were standing up and saying, your religion is what you believe in, we're shechting it in your face. What we're basically doing is saying we stand up for ourselves, we have our own pride, we believe in our derech is correct, we're not going to be intimidated by anyone else, we're not going to be tempted, we are utterly rejecting your whole religious belief, and we are committing ourselves to a monotheistic belief in Hashem. It's a Kabbalistic idea. Maybe you could tie this into matzah. It's very interesting that if you know a little about the process of chimutz, it's yeast, which is certainly a fungus, I think, whatever it is, that makes things be mechamitz. So how does that work? Why are we so nizer at 18 minutes? We don't put any yeast in. So why are we so nizzard to bake the matzah within 18 minutes? Because, like all germs, there's little spores of yeast everywhere floating through the air, right? How do people get, fungus in their feet if they never put yeast there? The answer is, there's all kinds of things hiding, germs hiding in all places which can infect you. Hoedin, for bread. If we leave the bread for 18 minutes, 99% of the time it won't become chametz, but we have to be on the safe side, both because we always have to be on the safe side because of the shmarjim samatzos, and we don't want to leave it because maybe if a little spore of yeast fell in it, that could cause the chemical reaction of yeast. And that was how, in the ancient, they go back 5,000 years, that's how people might have chametz bread if this process happened. But they didn't really have the advanced technology to do this on a regular basis, to know how to store the yeast and how to use it to make more bread. This wasn't a normal food for people. Everyone ate matzah in the old days. Until a great superpower, advanced technological culture, came about and invented the process of making leavened bread and brewing beer, which is also a process of fermentation, which greatly advanced the quality of life. And you could look, don't take my word for it, look and see the Encyclopedia Britannica under baking or something. And it says ancient Egyptian society was so advanced that they perfected the art of, not they invented it, the spores were always there, but the art of bechavana, mass production on a daily basis, making leavened bread, which was delicious, and making beer, which was another delicious drink made of fermentation. So basically, the Egyptian society, they were like the America, the superpower of their time. They were technologically advanced. They were rich. They lived in luxury. And the symbol of this, perhaps, was that they ate chametz, luxurious, advanced bread of progress. And what did Hashem tell the Jews to do maybe on the Seder night? Maybe on the Seder night, they didn't even need to ask Moshe what's pshat and matzah. Okay, the next day they would realize where everyone was pshat. But at that time, it was partial what pshat and matzah was. It's not enough to reject the religion of the Egyptians, right? It's not enough to say, I'm going to live in America, I don't go to church, but I accept the culture. Right? No, that's not going to work. That's not how to be Jewish. They were saying, we're going to get up and shecht your God to your face and reject your religion. And we're also going to get up and say, you think you have such a great society because you have bread and it's tasty and it's advanced, you're the world's superpower, and you have luxuries, and you have advanced technology. And Taka, you're right. We can't deny that chametz is more tasty than matzah. But we are going to reject that by davka eating chametz to show that even though we can eat your matzah, even though davka eating matzah to show even though we can eat your chametz, we're not interested in it. Because if the price of having the luxury and technology and advanced lifestyle and progress of your society is being shakua and your religion and your lack of morality and your lack of ethics and your derech life, which is taking us in the exact wrong direction in life, then it's not worth paying the price, and we'll just stand up and be proudly and say, we reject not only your religion, but we reject your entire culture, and we don't want to be in the tommy with any of it. And we'll fend for ourselves, we'll have our own way of life, we don't need your lifestyle, just like we don't need your religion. And then it's a very, very fascinating message they're sending, perhaps. That was what matzah might have meant to them on that first night. Nowadays it means, I'll show his sages all the single half with. Maybe the message Moshe was giving them was, on this Seder night, not only do we reject the religious beliefs and commit ourselves to monotheism, to Avodas Hashem, but you can't, like, say, I'm going to have my religion, but have their culture. We reject their culture as well, even though there are nice things about their culture. Neutral, beautiful, nice things. We don't want to get shakua in their culture, and we'll reject all the parts of their culture, if that's what's necessary to do, in order to be an Am Hashem and be ourselves, and make ourselves into true Avdei Hashem. That's third explanation, possibly, for this question. I'd like to wish everyone a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. What?